Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What's that?
I hate, I don't know, pollution?
Yeah, that's not great.
Like ocean pollution, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah. Oh, ocean pollution. Yeah, no, fuck that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it rhymes, it's dirty, gets all up in your gills.
You get jams your head in jars.
Oh, don't even get me started on head in jars. Just like our adorable friend Ponyo. Ponyo is the next Miyazaki movie, who I've been told his name is actually Hayao Miyazaki.
Oh.
Although I'm still mispronouncing it, but it's more that way than Hayao, which I was doing.
That's too bad. You had a nice thing going there.
But I mean, that's also only one person said that. But, you know,
it was Hayao Miyazaki.
Yeah, when 50% of our audience tells me something, I'll listen.
Steph quick, yeah, suspiciously
Ponyo,
quiet.
2008, Ponyo. It is delightful. I think Ponyo might be my best friend forever. Like, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
Because Sasuke also might be my best friend forever.
Cool.
And those old people might be my best friend forever.
Just chumming around with a couple of five-year-olds.
Yeah. I mean, Ponyo is like a magical creature from the sea, so true. I don't know if age is really a matter, you know?
Yeah, I bet you've used that excuse before.
So this was your first Ponyo.
Yes, this was my very first Ponyo.
How did you like Ponyo?
It's fine. I don't love it as much as his other works, but it still has a lot of things that I love in it. It's like the kiddie-ish, the most kiddie one I've seen. Most childish, perhaps. But I like the art style in it a lot.
Yes.
While the characters themselves still look like sort of cell animation, so much of the backgrounds look like colored pencil, which makes them very sort of textured and really, really adds to sort of the childish nature of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite parts of it is that kind of colored pencil backgrounds and how it just instills that kind of magical realism, childish thing to it. Because this movie is, with given any kind of seriousness, a fucking horror movie on a deep, deep level.
Yes, I have that in my notes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, it is the story of a fish that drinks human blood and then threatens the world because her psychopathic father is going to end the world of man to bring the ocean back to the Soviet age. It is a group of old women drowned violently, or would if it was not for man. Like, this movie could be dark as fuck.
Yeah, see,
I totally get it.
I didn't even go so far as to the magic dad. I just had a thing where this boy finds this strange sea creature. It inadvertently tastes some of his blood, which causes it to change, and then it hungers for more, and like has this almost like single white female thing going on, but just will stop at nothing to get this kid. And that's certainly how like the first half of the movie plays.
Yeah. And then, but I mean, her dad, Liam Neeson, is hell bent on destroying all humans. I think the reason I like this, it reminds me of old Looney Tunes and old fairy tales where it's just, I mean, not Looney Tunes, but like old Disney cartoons where it's just like, there is, if you peel back just the slightest little bit, it is dark as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. And although, I mean, I didn't get the sense that the dad wanted to destroy all humans.
He literally said he's going to wipe the plague of humans off the planet.
Ah, well, because I thought the whole thing, like towards the end, was him figuring out that we needed, there needed to be balance, and that Ponyo was upsetting the balance.
Yeah. No, at the end, yes. But like when he's putting the magic spell in the well,
that's right,
before Ponyo gets in there, his whole thing is just like him muttering, I'm going to bring this whole shit box back to the Soviet age. I'm paraphrasing slightly.
Yeah. Which I'm glad they kind of answered that question, because for the first part of this movie, I'm like, this man fucked a fish. This man is Troy McClure.
You'll be shocked. Note, I have that note as well, that he fucked a fish. I also said, do I dare bring up Cloaca again?
Yeah, well, because it's Ponyo. When you're introduced to Ponyo, she's in this undersea wizard's lair, trapped in this giant fishbowl with a bunch of what we learn are siblings, but like tinier versions of her, which I
think
they are creepy.
Oh, see, I thought they were adorable in the same way, because they make the same noise as the grubs from Hollow Knight. I think you played Hollow Knight,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They make that noise.
When they're like,
but higher.
Like gumming things and just, don't like it. creepy. Swarms of things with human faces. Awful.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds comforting to me. I would love to just be
devoured
by human faced fish.
Yep. Not my thing.
Finally turned back into sea foam.
He does make it, you know, as cute as a thing like that could be, I guess. But going on to your point about like the way he does the backgrounds and obviously it's a theme throughout his work of nature and loving nature and stuff like that. In fact, there's a on HBO Max on their Studio Ghibli channel, there's a Studio Ghibli nature reel. You can just press play and it's just a bunch of nature scenes all done Studio Ghibli.
Oh.
Yeah.
I may need to.
It's need relaxing. To that like he makes nature look like a place I want to be, instead of a place filled with bugs and allergens that will try to kill me. Mm. And it's frustrating. You're like, oh yeah, outside's pretty great, and then you go outside and it's awful. No thanks.
The opening thing is we're establishing Ponyo, though at the time, nay Brunhilde,
yeah.
Which is interesting because his Brunhilde, and they also have notes of or kind of. Ersatz one note off Flight of the Valkyries.
Yeah, he was actually inspired by Wagner's stuff when putting this together.
Yeah, because there's a lot of that, and there's a lot of it's got a lot of fantasia, the way the schools of fish are moving, and it's like this orchestral thing, and but anyway, yeah, the Brunhilde thing, I was like, oh, this is weird. Why is it like Wagner's Der Nibelung or whatever the fuck that is? But because you know, it's like Japanese, I don't know, it's just culture. It's perfect, but it just threw me off. But the opening thing is. Like these kind of woodcuts that are animated, and that's the credits.
Yeah, gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
I had this image of Wes Anderson just punching sheetrock going, I'll never be this perfect. I'll never get this far.
That was one step ahead. Yeah.
Because it is like everything he wants to be. It's pastel. It's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's young. There's darkness in it. It's like, he just, I'll never get there.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Hayao.
Yeah. I mean, this definitely has... tones of The Little Mermaid in there. But I mean, this joins the long list of films of movies about things wanting to be human, you know, be it The Little Mermaid, Under the Skin, Short Circuit 2, just masterpieces all. And I think this deserves a spot up there.
So you're positing that Ponyo's siblings are actually more like Los Locos, mm-hmm. where they'll kick your balls into outer space.
They'll gum your balls into outer space.
Ah. Yeah. Oh, I get it. Oh, much like the old people, because they've lost their teeth, mm-hmm. but still loved Given Dome.
The English dub must be a lot different than the subtitled version I watched.
You're the one that brought up a gum job. There's only one way a normal human mind would interpret you saying that, and that's, of course, being blown by an elderly person.
Now, I was talking to them about them destroying your testicles, but hey, there's no wrong way to eat a Reese's.
Yeah, don't forget to destroy the testicles. If I could have done a better Stallone, that would have been hilarious. I can't. So.
But it was good enough that I got it.
She gets stuck in a bottle, and Sasuke has to save her.
Because she escapes and gets caught in like a thing that's just like, I don't know, is it cleaning the garbage off the ocean floor or something? There's a ton of it. And it's like catching it in a net. And because at first it's like, is it, you know, trawling for something? Is it, you know, trying to get some crab or crayfish or something? But looked like it was just getting garbage.
Let's just say whatever you just said was right.
Sure. It was just, yeah.
Yeah.
Because
I'm sure you'll like to hear that. Mm-hmm. Enjoy.
Okay. I'm going to clip that and add that to every episode.
Please do. Enjoy. One of us was bound to be right at some point. I'm glad it'll be you in perpetuity. He says, here's a... question for you. What do you think his hair is supposed to look like, him being Sasuke?
What do I think his hair is supposed to look like?
Well, because he's got like gray hair underneath.
Well, I think it's just supposed to be close cut. Like,
is that supposed to read as close cut? Because it reads as just gray to me. I guess that's what they're trying to intimate.
No, it's like if you got a little you got a little blonde kid or something, and you being a little blonde kid myself at one point, you give him a super close haircut like that, it's going to look a little bit lighter than the rest of his hair.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of was my guess. I mean, obviously, that's the only answer, but it's an interesting way to do it because you need Sasuke to read both older and his age for the story to work because he's got to be like a brave little boy, but also he has to have the intelligence. And because like his mother essentially abandons him during a crisis. But like, so I think that, I don't know, I was just kind of positing that like the character design of having that gray almost allows some kind of agency or adulthood on him that you wouldn't get away with if he
had. That's interesting, you know. Yeah. Because, I mean, yeah, they didn't necessarily have to go as gray as they did, I suppose. But, yeah, that's...
Yeah, and he always wears the little hat, which is both adorable, but also it's like, I don't know, a symbol of authority. Mm-hmm. Because I was trying to... As I was watching the movie, a couple things jumped at me, because I've seen this a few times before. His mom is terrible at being a mom. I mean, she's like the loveliest human being ever in some scenes. And then other scenes, I'm going to drive my car like a fucking maniac and endanger my child's life for no reason other than I need to get home.
But it also,
and then when she gets home, she immediately turns around and leaves her child. Fuck her.
Yeah, and most of the times driving, though, like, it never seemed like she was out of control. Which isn't to say that she wasn't, you know what I mean? Because it can just change in a second. But it always just was like, yeah, she's like a maniac, but... She's got this. Like at one point, yeah, because they live on top of a hill. She's driving up there, and the car is like skidding. But there's no indication that anyone's in any real danger. Even though I'm watching it, and going, oh my god, the character's acting like this is just the normal. This is what happens.
Yeah, and that style of driving is very anime. Like there's a bunch of like kind of younger,
exactly, yeah,
style. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it just, yeah, I just, this time I found myself getting like infuriated of like how badly she's like, but I'm like, yeah, this movie kind of gives you leave to do that.
Yeah. See, yeah, I mean, and as far as like her abandoning him, like I agree, but like at that point it's like, well, we're safe up here. We know we're safe where we are. I'm worried about all those elderly people. And just in case someone's here, but like, it's not a great decision, but I don't think it's not like when you say abandon it, it sounds... More
no, but he's five. Yeah. There's a random other child she doesn't know that he now has to take care of.
Which she just accepts that thing's a fish.
I wonder about that. Once she meets her mom later, obviously she knows she's a fish.
Yeah.
But she's just doing the mom thing of like, oh, she used to be a fish, huh?
See, yeah, there's that. But like at a certain point in this nonsense, you don't think you'd be like, well, let's see if we can contact your parents or anything. You know what I mean? Like, where's your mom? Because you can probably break through the little kid's kayfabe pretty easy. But no, she just goes along with it the whole time. But that also, you know, maybe she's just trying to keep him calm. And then we'll deal with this afterwards. Maybe her parents are dead. I don't know.
Yeah, my husband's probably dead. Yeah. I'm stuck with this fucking kid.
Yeah. Which that's a reoccurring theme in this is the parental stuff, like the mothers and fathers. So Sasuke's dad is like gone all the time. That's a little point of drama with the mom. Whereas the mom's there. Whereas with Ponyo, her dad's always there and it's actually very controlling. Whereas the mom's gone all the time.
Yeah.
So I mean the point is in either case is that moms are great and dads are terrible. And I agree with it. And so much so that if I ever had kids, I will, because of this movie, I will not be a part of their lives whatsoever in order to give them the best possible future.
Well, John,
dads just shouldn't be around.
With one hand, I give you scorn,
mm-hmm,
for dumping those genetics onto another generation.
Mm-hmm.
But with my other hand, I give you praise,
yeah,
for leaving and not and keeping those personality traits,
yeah,
of another generation.
Yeah, see, that's my point. Is that like when the dads are hang around, look at what happens. It's bad. They're jerks.
Though once you leave, let me just give you a little preview. Hey, I'm your Uncle Alex.
Yeah. Oh, I will have moved far away from you by this time.
But you're leaving. That's like, you're leaving the kid, right?
No. I'll make sure my family's set up. It's like you know. Well, we're having a kid. We better move to where the schools are good.
Okay.
It's more just like just move.
Move where the Alex isn't.
I just move next to a school. That's really all we got to do.
I'm just gonna go through notes in order because I don't know how much we're gonna get from going beat by beat. But you know, let's hit the major plot points. But when Sasuke is at school, one of the cutest dialogues that's ever happened in the history of cute is Sasuke is talking to one of his classmates and she's like, hey, Sasuke, why don't we like go do something? And he's like, nah, I'm busy. He's like, you're not busy. You're five.
Uh-huh.
What a fucking delight. And then he responds with, I am too. I have a job.
Yeah.
And his job is watching over Ponyo, the blood drinking demon, magic demon from the deep, the Lovecraftian monster he birthed earlier.
Well, Sasuke's a little playboy because both the little girls that want to come play with him are little girls. And then Ponyo loves him. Like he's got swag. The whole movie, I'm like, damn, he's got swag.
He's got that cute little captain's hat. He's like a little Paul F. Tompkins.
Yeah. He's adorable. But that actually, because at that point, yeah, he has Ponyo in a little pail.
A green pail. Yeah, a
green pail. That, and there's one part where he accidentally dumps it over. And I made the sound my mom would make when she was teaching me how to drive that. Like, happened. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. Like, this isn't real. But man, it got me. I mean,
that's me. The Miyazaki thing is really like bringing out a lot of like paternal instincts to me that I didn't think were there.
Oh, totally. Just like when Ponyo becomes fully like a little girl and she and him are just like running around the house. She's got the light on her head and she's just running around and they're, you know, just chanting antenna, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, I get why people take pictures of their kids all the time or like,
yeah, totally.
You know, you could put up with all the awful stuff that kids do.
Take pictures of my Miyazaki movies.
Yeah. This is my real family.
One of the cute things too, when he's taking care of Ponyo at the school where he's like, puts leaves on top of, like, you know, you think there are any cats around?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's leaving a fish in a bucket, basically like trying to feed cats. Like, oh no, here's what I'll do. I'll put a leaf on it and that'll stop him. It's such great little kid logic. Mm-hmm. And again, I wouldn't be complimenting a kid for doing that because a kid's a fucking idiot. But these grown-ass men that animated this movie, that's an adorable thing for them to come up with.
Good job, homies.
So he runs from the school and we meet the old people. And in a sequence of weird coincidences, John and I decided to do the Miyazaki movies. And while it was happening, Miyazaki's birthday was celebrated, which obviously I didn't plan. And then in this movie, one of the American voice actors is Betty White, plays one of the old people who just passed away, big part of the news. So we are accidentally with our fingertips on the pulse of Hollywood.
Yeah, we're only off
a dead old lady
a week instead of 40. Stay tuned in November for our new Matrix review.
Betty White was there's the two nice old people and the mean lady.
Toki.
She's like kind of the main nice lady.
Oh, okay.
I don't know any of their names.
I think I know who you're talking about.
I think she might have a blue dress on.
Yeah, I only remember the shorter haired Toki, the mean one.
Toki's the mean one. Yeah, that's the one I remember, because, you know, why wouldn't you? But she's one of the two like kind of best friend old people. But I don't care about Betty White. I mean, she seemed great, but like, it's not, you know, that's not the world that I live in. But it was just kind of weird. Like, oh shit. Like out of all the movies, like we've done 100 and whatever movies. We've never even sniffed at Betty White.
Yeah.
And you know, out of nowhere, this one comes swinging.
Betty White.
Yeah. So I like the old people. They're cute in a different way than the children, but also they draw their faces similarly, you know, in that kind of circle of life kind of thing.
But also, and also just how they deal with him. Like, his, it's like the way, you know, grandmas will spoil their grandchildren, where she's like, I don't have to care anymore. Like, it's fine. I'm just going to be nice to you and sweet because I don't expect anything out of you. And I don't know. I enjoyed that, their interactions a lot.
Ponyo talks to him and says, Ponyo loves Sasuke and Ponyo loves ham. I think we need to establish.
Yeah. We've not talked about the occult powers of ham.
Well, I just assumed that humans taste like ham.
Oh, okay. That would probably be it.
Is that not the through? Like, I'm kind of joking, but like, I think that's what they're saying is she was born of human blood and like it's called long pig when you eat human. Like,
I
think the eating ham is eating people.
But she never like even thought about eating other people.
You don't know that.
Well, no, but I mean like it was not a plot point or anything where he has to be like, no, we don't eat people. You know, like in, one of the Terminators. I don't know. I feel like there's that. It's that fucking stupid Suicide Squad movie where they're like, no.
Oh, well, wait, fish. Don't wish fish people. Man. Yeah.
Maybe she initially thought that, but then had ham and went, you know what? I think ham's the way to go.
Yeah. Or she just needs to have another taste of that sweet, sweet Sasuke and go, ooh, I think I know what I want to eat. And then she goes on a bloodthirsty rampage lasts for generations. Yeah.
Or maybe ham does something to the blood. So if you're kosher or halal or something, you're fine. You don't have ham has not affected your mRNA.
Oh, all right. So this is like an anti-vax thing. Great. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Go on. Bill Gates doing to us?
If you pee on some ham and then inject that ham into some horse paste, you'll cure COVID.
Yeah, put that ivermectin. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the stuff. His dad, her dad, the under water wizard, Fujimoto. Mr. Fujimoto sends his amazingly animated wave creatures to take Ponyo back.
Yeah, this was kind of nice because I commented on Porco Rosso how much I love how he animates water. And then he was like, you like that? Check this out.
Oh, yeah. You know, he was answering your prayers here. Yeah. Yeah. And Ponyo gets pulled back in the sea and Sasuke cries. And I honestly got a little teared up when Sasuke started crying.
Well, here's something I didn't fully understand. And I don't fault the movie for this. Because
emotions are this thing that normal people have. I can walk you through it.
I'm not falling for that. I'll pee on some ham. That'll help me not have emotions.
Why don't you pee on three hams?
But when he's like scoping out the joint and he's got that like mister thing that he's the backpack mister thing. So it keeps him humidified, I think he says.
Oh, yeah.
And he kind of sees that the kid has Ponyo. Just shove the kid. Mm. Like, if you're this bad...
Well, he's not a monster.
Yeah, but he wants to destroy all mankind. And if this is going to, you know, yeah. If Ponyo being gone is going to cause the moon to hit Earth or whatever, just shove the kid.
I'm just saying, you know, it's one thing to commit genocide. It's another thing to push my best friend Sasuke.
Okay. Well, but yeah, but
he's an adorable little boy with a little cap on. But he's like a little sailor man.
He's my best friend. Does not know you exist.
I'm pretty sure Sasuke knows his best friend exists.
Obviously Sasuke does. I'm saying the villain doesn't. So he does, you know, Fujimoto doesn't know what he's messing with. And also he's...
Yeah, in disguise, but back when he pretended that he was Qui-Gon, he made me get a cool braid, and he was also my best friend and master until he was killed by an evil wizard.
Qui-Gon Jinn made everything worse. He is the real villain of the Star Wars prequels.
I think you're thinking of George Lucas.
No, he's a hero, and we should have had more midichlorians. But yeah, I just because I mean the movie in Miyazaki form, like there's not a villain. You know what I mean? Like the bad guy isn't bad necessarily. But at the same time, when he's like, just take the thing. It's right there. Whatever.
There's do you know what kami are?
Yeah, of course I do. Why don't you tell me what they are, and I'll just check to see if you're right.
It's part of Shinto, which is Japanese. You don't, religion's the wrong term. But they've got these spirits called kami, which they're like spirit of places. And kami, you leave little offerings to, like a steamed bun or something. Like saying, hey, thank you, Mr. Kami. I'm glad I'm in your woods or whatever. But the interesting thing about kami is you can't affect them. Like, you can piss them off if you do something stupid. But it's not like... if you leave an offering to a kami, they'll give you blessings or something.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're almost like storms or like just these aspects of nature that just exist. And all you can do is kind of hope to not annoy them. You can't please them. You can't like, they're just these intrinsic things. And I think a lot of Miyazaki comes from that. Like this water wizard.
Mm-hmm.
He's just doing what he's supposed to. Like,
right.
Objectively, he's in the right from his perspective. His ocean world is being fucked by humans. So he's doing this thing. And it's just this kami kind of concept where it's just they're doing what they do. And humans don't really – it's not a human-centric idea of the spiritual side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And Miyazaki really brings that around. And I don't know if that's if he grew up Shinto or something, but like it permeates a lot of his work.
Yeah. I mean like that kind of notion of particularly like balance between nature and mankind and – also, that same sort of thing of that generally people have their reasons for doing things that aren't just me want money or I mean, there are those people. But in his movies, it tends to be like people have deeper motivations than that. And because in this case, you know, particularly later on when he has saved the old folks home, you know what I mean? Like he doesn't want to hurt anybody. He just wants all of humankind gone.
Well, I mean, that's why it's kind of the comedy thing. Yeah. Objectively, they're trying to hurt anybody. They're just trying to do what mm-hmm. they do. There's an adorable thing about where we're talking about where, so Sasuke's crying, my heart's broken. And he's like, Mom, can I leave the pail out back? So Ponyo knows where I live. And it's such an adorable little kid moment mm-hmm. of, well, the fish is going to see this pail and know I live here. So she's going to come back up. But also that works.
Yeah.
Like it's such a beautiful, like that dumb kid logic, but like in this world, dumb kid logic is, yeah, of course that's the way it is. It's like fairy stories where it's just like, yeah, of course. What you walk around the tree three times Widdershins while singing.
Yeah.
How the hell else would you enter?
Well, I had read a couple of different takes on this, where one was this sort of idea that Sasuke's world versus Ponyo's world being kind of the conscious and subconscious, where because the ocean stuff is so like magical and strange and weird, and you know his day-to-day life is just day-to-day life is boring, whatever. But so that like leaving the bucket out absolutely would work, that kind of magic nonsense for this world. I also saw this Reddit ass stupid theory about like they're actually all dead, and this is about them dying. It's like, this is no, I don't buy that for a moment.
Those are the grossest theories, that they've been dead the whole time. Yeah. It's just, it's so fucking
the hurricane actually happened and it killed all them, and they're like, oh, you know, there's water and the River Styx has water, so it's the same thing. It's like it's deconstructive, or it's, you know, deconstruction, or just like that kind of form of criticism, but like without any thought put into it. It's just saying, well, that's in there, so that must be what.
No, totally. Yeah, it's just the easiest form of like alt theory.
Yeah.
That, oh, it's all in his head. Yeah. I mean, I wrote an entire book that can be read that way, but like I put effort into that.
There's ways to do it. You know,
we get it's established that his dad is kind of a jerk. He takes another ship duty. I don't know what you call it.
He loves his family, but he's married to the sea.
There should be a song about that. So, and there's this adorable little sequence where he is flashing his light to do like a Morse code back to the mainland.
An Aldous lamp.
Aldous lamp. I didn't know those words.
Yeah, they did the same thing in Porco Rosso, when all the pirates are doing that.
Yeah, Aldous. I don't think I knew that. But there's a fun thing, and there's like a nice like kind of you're in so much trouble 1996 joke of like his mom just be like, she's not having any of his fucking sweet talking Aldous lamp.
Yeah.
What does she keep saying? Bug off.
Oh, well, in the subtitle version, she just calls him a jerk. It's like, what did she say? Baka, whatever, which...
Yeah.
But like, I like it because he's like, oh, what should we say back? And she just like spells out jerk.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Yeah. In the dubbed, it's bug off, but she just keeps violently doing B-U-G-O-F-F. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a weird change. It's not like jerk is that.
I think it's maybe two, because that's two syllables, bug off. So that might match the mouth better than jerk.
Oh, that's a real good point. Yeah. Baka. Yeah. Bug off. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. That's a real good point. Yeah.
But I like that.
Don't clip that. Because if you clip that, then I'm going to have, that's a good point, John. Oh, this is a whole fucking a
great episode for
me. Hey, John, clip this one. Everything you just said is wrong and you're a dumb piece of shit. All right.
That's every other episode.
That's true.
But I do like that, that there is this, like, I'm mad at you. And like, there's this strife going on, but it is, Like in so much of his movies, like so much of that stuff is like background. It's not, it's part of the miasma of daily life, but it's not like a huge plot point. It is in the sense that he's gone later, but just like that strife in the relationship is just, okay, we know that that's a thing.
Well, because everything is from the kind of child perspective.
Yeah.
Even if a child is vaguely aware his parents are fighting, there's no, like, there's not like a... They're aware of the nuance.
Right.
Like, it's not like Sasuke's going, oh, I guess mom feels kind of abandoned and then she's stuck here with me and I don't...
Because I like dad and it's fine.
I like her mom just cracking a big Sapporo, just like, oh, yeah. Fuck this guy.
Yeah, and that's how the scene ends, is just like the beer foaming up and her being like, ah, crap. Did, in the dubbed version, does he call his parents by their first names or does he say mom and dad?
I feel like he says mom and dad. I'm not 100% sure about that though.
Because I thought it was I found it off-putting that he referred to his parents as Lisa in whatever the dad's name was. Just because that's such like a creepy little kid thing to do.
All right, my best friend's starting to get a little creepy.
But then that also speaks to your like aging him up a little bit, where you know he's his own little man. He calls adults by their regular names.
Because he calls the old people by their names.
Yeah. That makes sense to me, though, because, like, you might get introduced around where, you know, I'm Opal, you know.
No, but in Japanese culture, you'd call them by their, whatever they call their surname, their family name. Mm. And he calls them by their first name, like that by their, whatever,
yeah.
Informal name. I mean, whatever, its translation is fucking ridiculous. And there's no, there's no way for me to have any knowledge on that. This leads into one of my favorite scenes where we cut back to undersea and Brunhilde / Ponyo just wills herself to have hands and feet,
mm-hmm.
but they're like chicken feet.
Yes.
Which, like, there's this weird, because, I mean, that's a very magical, what's that lady in Russia with the chicken
Baba feet? Yaga. The house has chicken feet.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, whatever. But, like, it's a very Baba Yaga, like, yeah. It's a very, like, magical thing of her, but also she wills real hands, and she's got this delightful thing of, like, I want feet, like, Sosuke, and it's just, it is, I love this entire sequence, and then her dad in a... He just tries to shove her. Like, no, you can't have agency. You need to stay young
right.
and childlike and under the sea and just get back in. Yeah. It's that same panic single dad move. Like, no, can you please stop? Have you ever thought about not being a mutant, Bobby? Like,
yeah. Well, and I like that the her escape in that scene, like the way the water works, how she like basically like pulls out chunks of it when she's like escaping from the window.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like that was really cool. But yeah, again, this for the horror movie aspect of it, the weird like body horror of her halfway transition of like this almost human, but not, and she comes more like toad like almost in her face.
Okay. You might know this and I can't figure it out. When she's half chicken underwater, she looks like a Muppet baby, right?
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, she has that kind of Skeeter, like Big Mouth, or, you know,
is
Fozzie.
Skeeter
kind of
who I'm thinking of?
Might be. Or Kermit, even, you know, being a frog.
No, he was like a red-haired... Oh, no, it is Skeeter, exactly. Yeah. No, because it has the same kind of red hair falling over the top, kind of rounded face.
Yeah.
Like, Skeeter kind of looks like aquatic. Okay, yeah, yeah. There's, like, a very Skeeter thing. I'm glad I brought this up, because this really went somewhere, and it was totally worth our time.
Well, it was the third time I was right. So, I'm keeping it in.
But, you were right... But embarrassing, because you were aware of who that was, and I have a vague recollection of it.
It's cool to know who Skeeter is. So she escaped, and this is basically, and the process of escaping causes whatever magical elixirs her wizard dad has to get unleashed, and like chaos reigns. Her little siblings turn into giant fish wave things.
Wait. So he pours all that shit that he's pouring down a magical glowing well.
Because it seemed like when he had enough, that's when it was going to get raw.
Yeah.
And her her doing it was a complete like accident. She was just trying to, you know, because they even make reference to the door being broken a couple of times.
I was just going to say that door, like they've got that porthole window on it. Mm-hmm. And then where her sister puts her hand up that you just made that said, not Sasuke's boat. And you realize, oh my God, Desmond, this is true. So there's a lot of Lost here with the magical well. And although I think probably this, when was Lost on? I think this may have actually stole it. This is 2008. When was, there's some Lost stuff. And I'm sure they're pulling it from the same source, but the magical glowing well that can reset humanity. Like, ooh, uh-oh. And that also explains why Matthew Fox started to have a nice little round tummy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most adorable lyric in the history of ever.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've lost any kind of like coolness or like adulthood during this.
See, again, like having watched the subtitled version, no idea. You just sound
really?
A psychopath. And that was the most terrifying thing I've ever heard.
Hold on. Hold on, John, I have to sing for you.
No,
for a second.
No, that's okay.
Yes, absolutely. Because the lyrics are fucking... So the Ponyo song in English is Ponyo, 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 fishy in the sea, tiny little fishy, what could you really be? Ponyo, 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 magic sets you free. Oh, she's a little girl with a round tummy.
Okay.
And then it goes on. But also, I got the meter of what I just did could not be further away from it because I don't really remember how the song goes. I just remember the rhyme of... Oh, she's a little girl with a round tummy. It's so fucking weird.
I thought we wandered into some weird, like, deviant art, like Alex. Matthew Fox.
But what we haven't talked about is that Ponyo Cliff on the Sea is by Noah Cyrus, Miley Cyrus's brother, and Frankie Jonas, who I believe is part of the Jonas Brothers, remember them from
It makes sense. I mean, because wasn't this like a Disney release or something?
Yes.
Yeah, that would make sense because they're under that umbrella.
Because one of the Cyruses plays Sasuke, I think.
Well, and this typhoon thing is the most... Like, this is where all the horror movie stuff really comes to a head to me because it's terrifying. Like, everything's getting destroyed by these fish, these waves that are also fish that Ponyo is running on top of. It's an amazing spectacle. but it is like causing all kinds of destruction. Particularly like later, you see like all the, how underwater everything is.
In a real version of this, like thousands of people are dead.
Yeah. That was another in that stupid Reddit theory, is that you can tell they're dead because in the real world, that water would be cloudy, and it's not in this. And so it's more of like they're crossing over to the other side. So because everything else in this movie is totally real. And
you know what's a good point about that is that that guy's a dumb shit.
Yeah, I just don't go to Reddit for film theories. Just
you know what? Don't. You know what? In this section, his mother, she risks her child's life to get in front of the tsunamis just so she can go home.
Mm-hmm.
When the worker guys are like, "Go the other way on the leeward side of the island that never floods," like they're right. But anyway, I love Ponyo comes back, runs on the waves. And they're like, they stick their head underwater to watch all the fish. And somehow between Ponyo and Sasuke, they know like, oh, these are Denisovian creatures. That's Diplofluckluffloof. Oh, look, There's a Snoomanablobadoom. It is so fucking random. It is so great. He's five. And somehow he knows like these intense Greek, you know, whatever, millions of years old fish.
Well, I mean, it's like a little kid talking about dinosaurs. You know, they know everything about dinosaurs, you know. It's just like,
no, but this is some obscure ass shit. Yeah.
I could, the whole time though, I was just thinking about opening your eyes in salt water and just, oh my god, that would hurt so bad. But they both seem fine with it. I mean, Ponyo makes sense, but
hey, you want to know how dumb I am? I literally just took a second going, wait, the Sea of Japan, is that salt water?
Yeah,
that's how stupid I am as a person, that I was like, no, because it's in between, you know, like a big body of water. So it could, I'm so fucking dumb. Like I'm like, I don't know how to tie my shoes dumb sometimes.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm right there with you, but I'm not going to say it on mic.
Yeah, I do. See, the thing is, I am, and weirdly, don't care.
Yeah, well, I'm sure I have. Because
I live alone and there's no one around to embarrass other than me. Like it's all on me.
No, it's fine.
Audience at home, I know you're shocked. I live alone. I'm like super lonely. I know that's like new fucking fantastic material for you. I'm like really sad all the time, and that's why I act like this. So hey, look, new characters. Anybody new to the show?
It's a wacky new character. More lonely, Alex. So it's in the midst of all this that Sasuke, Ponyo finds Sasuke, gets into the mom's car, and they take Ponyo home. And this is, this is where it's just super adorable for a good, like, 5-10 minutes. And I'm like,
oh, that's fine.
Of them just, like, putzing around the house. Love it.
There's a great moment of Ponyo comes out of the ocean carrying the little green pail. And then just hugs Sasuke. And her mom's like, do you know this girl? it's really fun.
But I like when she gives her the light and she's just putting on top of her head and just running around the house.
I was going to bring up that plug-in lamp thing. Mm-hmm. Dope as fuck.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool.
I don't say dope
really, but I'm like, damn, I want one of those for the apartment. Yeah. Like, that's fucking awesome.
It's pretty nice.
They have hot cocoa, which is adorable. Mm-hmm. There's a delightful ramen eating scene. And then Ponyo is like all fat and sleepy. And I literally wrote, and I quote, Jesus, I'm having a hard time with adult life alone.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
That is a direct quote.
Ponyo being sleepy, always adorable.
If I may pull back up the shroud of kayfabe, I would like to read the rest of my notes that happened two things later. Ponyo's mom be banging underwater, the goddess of mercy. How did he impregnate her? Yikes. Is this like a Hagrid situation?
Yeah. You do have problems with adult life.
Well, no, I just needed to, like, because I was, like, showing, like, emotions and stuff, like, a second ago. I want to chase everybody back away, make sure that's fine. But then, like her mother shrinks down to human size. You're like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, which the way the mother is presented, which I like, because when they ask, because Lisa asks about Ponyo's parents, and she's like, yeah, my dad's mean. My mom is amazing. She's gone a lot. She's very scary. But like he says it in this way that's like, yeah, my mom's terrifying. I love it.
Yeah, she says she's big and beautiful and very, very scary. It's like, oh.
And so right, when she shows up and like when it's revealed the scale of how big the mom is fantastic. Like that's just a great reveal. And I love the design because she's almost like Little Mermaid like with the big red flowing hair, but how she is this amazingly beautiful creature but is always like undulating and never like quite right, like her head seems like sometimes like it's too small for the body because it's always just like in motion. And like later when she is, I think it's like she's holding a Fujimoto, and like you can see that her skin is actually translucent and you can like see him through just weird little, not like off-putting, but uncanny things about her that keep her being extremely like magical and strange beyond just, I'm a big old woman.
Yeah. And then she kind of shrinks down and becomes a somewhat, you know, scaled, like, mm-hmm. I kind of get it. And they agree that if Sasuke doesn't love her, she'll turn back into sea foam, which is very, that's a very Little Mermaid concept.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there's this line where it says sea foam and Fujimoto's like, oh, that's terrible. It's like, well, that's how we all go back.
Yeah.
It's like this very like natural, just, yeah, where it's, yeah, that's the nature of all things. Like, yeah, she probably could have had a life, but like, you know, it's fine. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, because
we all go back to sea foam.
Apparently he read, Miyazaki read Little Mermaid as a kid and was not so fond of it. In Hans Christian Andersen's version, like, mermaids don't have souls. And so there's a sort of like Christian element to it of like, if you do the right things and you're good enough, you'll get a soul and ascend into heaven. Whereas this is more just like, no, we're all part of the same nonsense.
Yeah.
The important thing is to love one another.
By the way, if you read the original Little Mermaid, it's fucking brutal. It's really, really horrible. Like, don't bring that anywhere near your children.
Yep. A lot of good old fairy tales are pretty.
And that's creepy. I'm going to call Alex saying that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's agreed that there's going to be basically to decide the fate of all mankind. We find out whether a 5-year-old has a crush on another 5-year-old, which is, let's not try to think about it too much. There is a great, sequence where Sasuke and Ponyo decide to try to find Sasuke's mom, and Ponyo, expands his little toy boat so they can both drive it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a boat like that before, and I'm so mad that as a little kid, I didn't have like a cool, like, light a fire and it starts a thing boat.
Mm-hmm.
How rad would that be when you're fucking 5?
Yeah, you're not getting a toy here that you need to light a fire to make it work.
When I was 5, I think I would have been allowed.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were probably on like the tail end of that. I mean, like, if you were in the 50s or 60s, oh hell yeah.
Oh yeah, they gave you like radium with your fucking chemistry set. But like, what a cool toy. I just love that sequence of the boat being enlarged. But then there's this really great sequence, and again, I want to break kayfabe for a second, where they meet this very ugly, angry baby and her mom. That baby's face is so mad.
Yeah, it was nice to see some representation.
Yeah, you are the angry baby of the show.
That is true.
But I love this conversation of like, she wants to feed the baby something. She's like, oh no, the baby only drinks milk. And like the kind of primal understanding of what breast milk is. And Sasuke being like, no, my mom gave me milk too. That's how this works. And it's just, I don't know. It's a really kind of wholesome, this would not show up in an American movie.
Well, just how like, Ponyo's whole body language in that, the way like it's a kid that like, no, I want him to do this. That's not for you. That's for him. But like, not mean, you know what I mean? But like, she's like trying to assert her desires, but it's in this very like little kid way. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's something that I love immensely about these Miyazaki movies is that they're not awful American children's stuff. There's tons of fine stuff out there for kids watching. It's fine. It's also not for me, but I rewatched The Secret of Nim not that long ago, and I was like, yeah, there's not like musical numbers. It's grim and kind of sad and kind of scary in places. Like, I miss stuff being like this instead of just everyone having the fucking DreamWorks CG face. And
then here's the part where magical reality sets in. Ponyo walks on water
mm-hmm.
to cure a baby of her illness.
Yes.
Like, literally, religions were founded on much, much less. Like, we have watched the creation of a new messiah, a chicken-footed messiah.
All hail chicken foot.
Yeah. It's a great scene, but it's just one of those. Oh, also, dude, that tunnel was so scary that they have to pass through.
It was. And I also, particularly because Ponyo is so sleepy. But like, it's adorable, but it's also like adds to the danger. Doesn't feel like the right word. Cause as much as like you said, for it being like from the child's point of view, for as how horrific the stakes are, you never get the sense of the grandness of it. Cause you're with Sasuke so much. It's like the large is made personal, which it's a very different movie to compare this to, but it's like, that's something that never worked for me for Godzilla versus Kong, where it's like, we want to have this tiny little story about like this, these people, but we also want to have these giant monsters fight and have you care about them equally. And it never really worked. Whereas this,
yeah,
like you understand the stakes, but Sasuke doesn't. Sasuke's just like, I need to see my mom. Like, I'd like to go find out where my mom is.
No, it's totally correct. That's why I think these work, because I don't know. It's that fairy tale thing again coming back.
Yeah, just keeping that point of view consistent, I think, works.
Yeah, and then we kind of lead into, I mean, we kind of touched on this, is that Fujimoto saves the old people home by trapping it in like an underwater bubble. Mm-hmm. And I love that Sasuke's mom is just vibing with the, I think a Grandma Mara is what they call her in it, but like the like goddess of the sea. And they're just like, the old people are like, they've been talking for like a day straight. They're like, hey, what are you talking about over there? We want to go too.
That whole thing, I love how this the old women in the nursing home are spry enough now, or feel good enough to like, were before they were in wheelchairs, now they're running around and they're enjoying being able to run again. And there was just something very pure and sweet about that. That's where I started to get a little like choked up, that like, because there was not any indication of like, oh, we're young again, we're gonna live forever. It was almost like that movie Cocoon or something, where it's just like, hey, right now we're doing great.
I was about to bring up Cocoon. Yeah, it reminded me of Cocoon, which was a weird favorite of mine when I was a kid.
Still have never seen it. I just know that this, I've just seen like the scene where they're in the pool. That's it. Like, that's all I know about Cocoon and Steve Guttenberg.
Really? That's surprising.
Yeah, never saw it.
Very close relative, Wilford Brimley, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. We had it on tape. I just never watched it.
Your mustache idol, Wilford Brimley, isn't it?
Mustache idol, yep. Every boy has one.
Well, he's got a similar facial hair to you. Also, scary enough, he's not that much older than us in that movie.
Yeah.
Because that man played old as shit. Like, he's in that movie playing like 70, and I think he's 50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's weird. Like, something happened in the 90s where everybody got about 15 years more to their lifespan. Like, I don't know, did we, like, invent collagen or something in about 1993?
It's damn fluoride in the water supply. That's the problem.
It works for me.
It's we're turning the friggin' frogs gay.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's Ponyo loves Sasuke, and everything works out. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, it all ends up getting solved. And, yeah, basically, he, you know, the dad learns to let go enough, and is like, you know, do you really love her? And he's like, oh, absolutely. But, again, like, because of this movie and the way this movie is, it's very much this, like, not agape, but like, it's a very like love for your fellow man kind of love. It's a very like, it's fairy tale love. There's not a romantic side to it really, but or at least that you know, the movie doesn't really present it as that kind of love.
So wait, John, just, I mean, I obviously know what agape means, but like, you know, maybe somebody in the audience are like some like very dumb person that like doesn't know what that word is like at all. Maybe you could like explain to them, because like I could do it, but like, you know, you said it, so I thought like maybe you could do
it. It's like the fatherly love of God for humans, or just like the human reciprocal love for God. It's the highest form of love.
I mean, yeah, I knew that. Thanks for explaining it. No, but I kind of got from you from context, but I'm like, yeah, that's an interesting word. I should have Mr. Smarty Pants explain it.
I only know it just came up in another context. But then, yeah, the movie ends with like, because he's supposed to like, if he in a much fairy tale way, if he kisses her, she'll totally turn into a human. And Ponyo hops out of her little bucket and kisses him. And the movie like pulls back. There's Ponyo like midair and Sasuke looking kind of surprised. And so it ends kind of like ambiguously, where it's like, okay, everything's saved and, you know, Ponyo gets to be free, but did we just witness an arranged marriage between 5-year-olds?
I think so. Or at least an arranged, like, stewardship.
I mean, because it is more of a, like, it seems like they're going to be siblings, you know, or something, because that's going to get weird later. It ends happily, but at the same time, it doesn't have that, like, happy ending feeling, or at least I didn't feel that way. Like, I wasn't like, oh, are things going to work out? But it just didn't have that, like, everything's perfect now kind of feeling to it.
Yeah, it's like an actual story where just, yeah, no story at the end, everything's cured. It's like, oh, good. The thing we're dealing with right now is kind of dealt with. So let's just, yeah, we're moving on. Yeah.
And I like that, again, that ambiguity that he brings to a lot of his work. Because it's also just, it's nice to, and I can't speak for actual children with this, but children seem to enjoy this stuff, all right, is that like, to not treat children like idiots, you know, to not just jingle keys at them.
In closing, I could not recommend this movie enough. Well, no, I could. It's, I really enjoyed it. But obviously, I think you get the vibe of what this movie is. If you're in the mood for something like this, I think it's pure and lovely and great and really, really enjoyable.
It's a lot lighter. It's fine. It's good. I just, I didn't like it as much. There wasn't as much for me to like hold on to, but it's beautiful. absolutely worth seeing.
Recommendations. I have a recommendation for you and for the audience. So much so, I actually texted you this. Station 11 on HBO Max. It's based on a book that I've never heard of. I don't know if it's popular or not, but motherfucker, I really love the show. It is like 9 episodes long, I think. Maybe 10. The newest episode premiered yesterday, or the final episode premiered yesterday. It's post-apocalyptic. Was filmed kind of as, like, before COVID started. Definitely written before COVID started, but like, oh my God, there's so much COVID in it. It's bananas. But like, basically, you're following I don't want to give too much away, but it's basically post-apocalyptic, and there's a like a Shakespeare troupe that they make their money in the apocalypse after the apocalypse, basically doing Shakespeare things, and like they kind of talk about the world before, the world after, and the interseas between the two, and it's just really great. There's one of the leads is a character called Jeevan. He's a just such a well done character. He's got panic attacks. He's got like a weird personality, but like he's really likable. They're just it's a character I don't see enough of, and maybe it's that representation thing. I'm like, oh, someone with a panic disorder. Like this, I feel seen.
Yeah, I read the book years ago. Like George R. Martin was a big, probably still is, a fan of it, and I remember reading it. And I'm like the one person that like I was like I don't really enjoy this, but I think. Maybe just wasn't what I expected it to be. I don't know. I should give it another shot. But I've heard nothing but good things about the show. And so I've been meaning to check it out.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I don't have anything like nuanced to say about it. Just there's some representation. There's some character stuff that isn't done the normal way. I think all the actors are really fucking killing it. Lori Petty's in some.
Oh, I love Lori Petty. I love. Yeah.
David Cross shows up, who actually does a good job. I like saving things. Anyway, yeah, it's very good.
Nice. Mine, I'm going to go the complete opposite end of the animation spectrum. Watched Mad God by Phil Tippett, who Phil Tippett is a special effects guy. Did like ED-209 in RoboCop. Did stuff for Star Wars. Just classic.
That's why
special effects guy made this wild, like all stop motion movie. It's light on plot, but. There's a lot there, and it's like everything is so is so detailed, and you know you can tell a lot of time spent on it. It is disgusting. It is one of the most like just putrescent, obscene, gross things. It's
what's it called again?
Mad God.
Oh, it's from like right now. Oh shit!
But it's amazing to watch. Like it does have, when I say like it's line of plot, like it does have things to say, and I think it says it very effectively, but it is very surreal and like it's made of nightmares. Like
it looks cool. It looks like a Tool video.
Yeah, it's like a Tool video, but you don't have to listen to Tool. But yeah, it'll get in your brain. It's like David Lynch sees it and is like, check please. You know, Cronenberg's all like clean up on aisle 3. And Eli Roth is going like, women love me, fish fear me. You know, it's one of those movies.
Yeah, it's like jokes from the 90s.
But yeah, I haven't seen anything like it before. It's wild. I hope to watch again. But for a more accessible, in a number of ways, recommendation. Right now on Hulu, they're playing Riders of Justice, which is also a very recent movie with... Mads Mikkelsen. It's a Dutch movie. It's amazing. It's about this man. He's in the army. His wife and daughter die in a train crash. Or his wife dies in a train crash. Daughter survives. And this other guy on the train crash is convinced it wasn't an accident. And things kind of spiral out from there in this mission of vengeance. But it's a comedy. And it's very sweet and funny. There's moments of violence, but it's absolutely wonderful. And I can't recommend it enough.
Oh, nice. I'm a big Mads
guy. I believe I texted you that it's bullshit that I have to go through life not looking like Mads Mikkelsen.
Dude, I hear you. I'm the fucking same way. It's really
Joe Biden, get on that.
All right. So next episode, we don't have to think about because we asked the audience on Twitter at JahsPod, J-A-H-S pod, a little poll. What next to Miyazaki should we do? And the overwhelming winner was My Neighbor Totoro.
All right.
You know, one of the more famous ones where boldly Miyazaki used his time machine to steal the concept of Snorlax to make one of the most iconic characters in the history of Eastern animation.
And get those cops fired.
Oh, that's funny. Yes, yes. Well done.
I
was like, what the fuck are you talking? Oh, yeah.
I guess people heard you mention that your biological clock was ticking and went, you know what? Let's really make that hurt and focus more on Miyazaki children stuff. And here's My Neighbor Totoro. So way to go, audience.
At least this one has weird forest spirits and shit that I can vibe with.
You can forget the pain of being alive.
Like, Totoro is a total incel. Like, so, like, it's totally fine. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen his posts on men going their own way.
Lonely guy, obsessed with Japan, totally overweight, bad teeth, sound like somebody you know.
Well, he's got nice teeth. I thought he has.
Yeah, sure. I don't really have bad teeth either. Right? I was just trying to come up with something else that I kind of just fucking bailed.
A third thing. He's got that too.
Yeah, it's literally an inaccurate third thing because my teeth are fine. Like, fair to middling. It's totally.
They're acceptable teeth.
Yes, they work. They chomp on things and are kind of, you know, at least related to the color they're supposed to be.
So everyone send Alex your love at JawsPod, you know, hashtag love Alex's teeth. It's Alex with two X's. Let's get that trending.
Yeah, or just DM, hey, Alex, I've always been thirsty for you. I'm finally willing to admit it. I live in Portland and I'm attractive and in your age group.
And I'm a tooth.
I mean, I'm not gonna, you know, dent shame anybody. So, you know, if that's what you're into, that's what you're doing.
That sounds fine. But yeah, we're Twitter there, or we're on Facebook as well. And we're on Pod Things, which you should go listen to us and rate and review and recommend to your friends.
Exactly what John said. Rate, review, subscribe, do all that kind of stuff. And much like the great Robert, last name redacted, because I don't know if he wants to have it on the show, he shared stuff on Facebook, like Steph Quick does. Share on Facebook, share on Twitter, spread the gospel. Have people go, why do you listen to this show? But then you can have a conversation with your friend. It's win-win.
you can explain yourself. And our friend Pam did that as well, right?
I think it's Pamela.
Yes. I wasn't sure it was Pamela.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know either. But the thing that, the reason I didn't recognize that name was the, like, it's basically I'm saying, hey, John, this is my brain. I'm a big dummy that doesn't understand words.
Yeah, I've been on 100 episodes of the show with you.
That's nonsense. The first, 30 episodes, my brain hadn't degraded that much. I still do words
back
then.
Mine's garbage, too. So it's this. I think you can probably go back and, watch our mental decline happen, chart it out. There's probably, real touch points of, roundabout rain of fire. It's, you know.
Yeah.
The language centers begin to dissolve.
I bet you once the pandemic starts, you could actually. Yeah, I think once pandemic, pandemic starts, add 4 months, and you can actually see, do those charts of how many words we use per sentence. Yeah. It just starts dropping and dropping. Language just starts dropping. And then towards the end, it's just Alex going, Ponyo, 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 it's got a tummy. Someone hug me. I'm really lonely.
Yeah, that's
that's a good rhyming.
That was good.
My degree in poetry is coming in handy.
Finally. Paid for itself.
All right, we're now after all that stuff that's definitely going to be in the edit. Everybody, we'll see you next time with My Neighbor Totoro.
Goodbye.
Bye. Ponyo, 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 sakana no ko, aoi umi kara yatte kita. Ponyo, 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 fukuranda, mamaru onaka no onna no ko.